things get a little bit grim. But this is especially heinous.
Did you tell the police that she was murdered, May?
Nope.
Witchy ghost stuff.
Ah! That made me scared.
A spooky girl amateur hour.
Hi!
Hi!
We're so sorry to interrupt. We'll get you right to the episode in a sec.
And we're very sorry for keeping secrets.
But the secret is out.
It's here. We are so excited to announce the Grim Line with BFF Candle Co.
BFF Candle Co. is ran by Chelsea and Alyssa, who are BFFs, who decided to start their candle business so they could spend more time together.
Just like us.
Just like us. We did that.
They are so cool and fun to be around. And Jenny and I are huge fans of them and their candles.
So if you're wondering what the Grim Line is, it is a coordinating candle set hand-picked by Taylor and I and made with love by BFF Candle Co.
We spent the day scheming and plotting and smelling and finally decided on a line that really reflected us.
We wanted, like, warm and unexpected fall scents that we hope everybody will love.
I picked out Cozy Sweater.
I picked Cashmere Woods.
We wanted something autumnal, but not limited to the season and unisex.
Something that, you know, hopefully everybody
would like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We wanted this to, like, really benefit something. So something that is really near and dear to all of our hearts is the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline.
Portion of all the sales will go directly to the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. They have received over 20 million calls since 2005.
That is crazy.
I know.
Their work is so near and dear to our hearts and so important.
Yeah.
And I think we just really wanted that to be the focus. In September is National Suicide Prevention Month. So
we're launching in September.
There we go.
And you can buy the set, you can buy both, or you can just buy one. Either way, a portion of the sales go directly to the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline.
So you can go check it out on our website, alittlebitgrim.com, and follow our links.
Or you can go to their website, bffcandleco.com. Also, make sure to follow their socials, which are tagged in the show notes, and follow ours too, if you aren't already.
All right, on to the episode. Goodbye!
Bye!
Hi.
Hi.
Oh, mic's
ready, set, go. Hi.
Hello.
Hello again.
Welcome to A Little Bit Grim Corner.
It's the podcast you're listening to. That's Taylor.
That's Jenny. You found us.
Hi. Missed you.
Missed you so much. We've done another little relocation. We're on the couch today.
We're both sitting on the same piece of furniture. It's fun. It's fresh.
We like to liven it up.
A change of scenery.
Yeah. Same room. Different location.
There's some new decor items in here.
Yeah, I went to Indy yesterday. I was super excited to get my blanket ladder that I've been trying to get for this room forever. Just because it's got, like, blankets just strewn about all the time.
Which gives it, like, such a cozy feel.
Right. Cozy, but also messy.
Well.
And so now I'm excited that I have a place for all my blankies.
We don't like mess. Organized chaos.
Yeah. Yeah. How was your week?
My week was so good. It was good. It's a full moon.
Yes.
Today. Not when this episode airs, but, like, in the real timeline.
In real time.
In real time. It is a full moon. So I have big witchy plans tonight.
Ooh. What are you doing?
It is ritual bath.
The
moon
huge.
Water, the simmer pot, the
sure.
whole
yeah.
Sheboygan, if you will.
I saw a guy on TikTok and he made me laugh so hard. He was like lazy witchy tips and he just like filled a water bottle with water and stood out on his balcony and chucked them all into the lawn. It was like the easiest way to get moon water. And I was like, this is a smart man.
On it, just leave a case of water sitting outside and then you just have it on tap.
Absolutely. Why are we not thinking this way? Working harder, not smarter.
You know, I always have wondered how they mass produce holy water.
Oh, yeah.
Like, do they just have like a water tower and the Pope comes and says like his
blesses
thing.
The whole tower.
Yeah.
That would be a smart move.
That would be a smart move.
Huh. Tell us how you get your holy water.
I don't know.
Holy water?
Speaking of, we're kind of
folklore.
On the right track. It's
yeah.
folklore.
Yeah, it is.
I'm excited.
I'm very excited today. Hold on. I got to find my story. It's lost in the realm of my Google Docs.
We're so unprepared.
All right. Let's see. Oh, yeah.
Did you just remember what you're covering?
Yeah. Well, I remembered my next story. Okay. Because I'm really excited about my next one. And I'm also excited about this one, too. This is actually a suggestion.
Oh, it was?
Yeah.
Do you remember from who?
Yeah. Her name's Ashley, and she works with me.
Oh.
And when she first found out that we were doing a podcast, she asked me to do this story. So this is probably one of the first requests I ever got.
Oh, my gosh. Well, better late
than
never.
Full circle.
I love that. Okay.
Yeah.
Are we diving right in? Do we have any more? Do you have anything to jibber jabber?
Go get our candle.
Go check them out.
Welcome to September.
Support a great cause. Welcome to September. Are we freshly in September?
Yes, this will come out on the 3rd.
Happy September!
Happy September! We made a huge announcement a couple of days ago about our
candle,
and we hope that you want to support this cause because we really, really believe in it, and we're very excited to be partnering with BFF Candle Co. More on them in a little bit. So yeah. That's cool. All I have.
Housekeeping!
Just me exciting.
Oh my god, can you believe it?
Yeah.
Look, two girls who don't know what they're doing masquerading as professionals.
Yeah, that's what we should have called the podcast, Masquerading as Professionals.
Masquerading as Professionals. Uh-huh. Imposter syndrome embodied into a podcast.
Yeah, welcome. We don't know what we're doing.
No, never. Not once have we.
Okay, so I guess I can just jump heckin' right on in.
Do it. Tell me a creepy tale. What are you telling me about?
I am going to tell you about the Jersey Devil.
Oh, cool!
And I had no idea about this dude.
Oh, I like him.
This is one that I've always, he's on all the lists, like top 10 folklore of the United States, blah, 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 blah. And I really just had no idea where he came from.
Yeah.
So learning about his history was very cool.
Okay.
Because there's very little history here. It just gets real deep into folklore immediately.
Okay. We're real rumor milly.
Yeah.
I love that.
All right. So my sources are The Jersey Devil, The Real Story, written by Brian Regal for The Skeptical Inquirer, and an article by PinelandsAlliance.org. I'm sorry, I didn't write the author, but an article on PinelandsAlliance.org, and then the New Jersey Library. To understand the legend of the Jersey Devil, you must first understand his birthplace. It is a remote region extending 1,700 square miles across southeastern New Jersey. It is actually a giant aquifer with dense stands of white cedar. Inside, the air is calm, still, and cool, the shadows heavy. The cedar stands throughout the swamp, stain the streams red with tannin. One area of stunted trees is called the Pygmy Forest. While many consider it a barren wilderness, 27 varieties of orchids grow there.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's cool. Orchids are hard to grow.
And they just grow wild there.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
The conditions have to be
so specific.
Yeah. Ian just got me an orchid.
Oh, really?
Sorry. I'm so sidetracked.
Yeah, you're good.
But I've accidentally kept it alive for 2.5 weeks. I know, remarkable. But I just learned if you have an orchid, you can only water it in the mornings. Otherwise, it'll die. It's so picky.
That's very... extra,
yeah,
of the orchid
is seriously high maintenance.
Oh my gosh,
a cancer,
yeah, for sure.
Cancer energy.
In the early days, travel was difficult, for the cedar swamps were great obstacles. Some roads were old Indian trails, others are old stagecoach roads. Some roads are paved while others are sandy. Roads lead to places named Hog Willow, Double Trouble, Suey Place, and Mary Ann's Furnace.
What,
yeah,
is that a town?
Yeah,
I wonder if it's hot there.
I hope so.
I hope so, too.
These names date back to the colonial times when settlers first came to New Jersey. The birthplace of the Jersey Devil is called the Pine Barrens.
Ooh.
This whole first paragraph was a quote from an article called The Jersey Devil Fact or Fiction, written by Carol Johnson and David Munn of the Atlantic County Library. It was a stormy summer night in 1735. Jane Leeds and her husband lived in the Pine Barrens area of southern New Jersey. Jane Leeds had already had 12 children and was known as Mother Leeds. Mother Leeds had found out she was pregnant with her 13th child and on this stormy night cursed the child out of frustration.
Her 13th?
Yeah.
I would curse that child, yeah, too.
Yeah, she was pissed.
I would banish my husband.
Yeah. So she was super mad, cursed the child.
Mm-hmm.
Her friend and her family had shown up at their home to help her through the labor and delivery, and she cried aloud that the child would be the devil.
Ooh.
The child was born and everything seemed normal. However, the child soon changed into a creature with hooves, a goat's head, bat wings, and a forked tail.
Two.
Yeah. As it grew, it screamed and whipped its tail around, hitting friends and family. The creature then gave a screech, unfolded its wings, and flew out the window into the adjacent swamp.
Oh my god.
This is just one story of how the Jersey Devil came to be. At the time, it was known as the Leeds Devil. Another story is that Mother Leeds was actually a witch, and she had slept with the devil himself, and the child was his. Another story surrounds a girl who fell in love with a local English soldier. She becomes pregnant with his baby, and the townspeople were furious that she had fallen in love with the enemy. They called it treason, and they cursed her child, and it became the devil.
Ooh.
Another variation on the tale tells the tale of a young woman who encounters a passing gypsy begging for food. She was frightened and refused. The gypsy cursed her for her refusal. Years later, in 1850, with the curse forgotten, when the girl gave birth to her first child, a male, he became the devil and fled into the woods.
Oh my gosh.
It is interesting to note that during the 1700s, people believed deeply in the evils of witchcraft, and when a baby was born with a physical disability, it was because God was punishing the family for not being good enough Christians.
Ugh.
It's very possible that any of these women could have given birth to a baby with a disability, and that is what sparked the folklore.
Oh, that is sad.
Yeah, very sad.
God.
What we do know is that there was indeed a Leeds family, and they did have 12 children.
Really?
Yeah, at least Mr. Leeds put 12 children in his will, which jives with the first story.
Yeah.
However, it was Deborah Leeds, not Jane Leeds.
Mm.
And before 1909, the creature was known as the Leeds Devil, or the Devil of Leeds.
Weird.
Yeah. It was also called... The Hoodle Doodle Bird.
No, no, it wasn't.
Or the, oh, the Wazzle Bug.
The Toodle Oodle Bird.
The Hoodle Doodle Bird.
Scoodle Woodle.
Scoodle Oodle. I was like, what?
I'm never going to be able to move on from this.
How did Spooky. How did we go from the Hoodle Doodle Bird to the Jersey Devil?
I mean, honestly,
I don't know.
I just turned.
Thought that that was a fun fact. Brian Regal, a historian of science at Keene University, theorizes that the story of Mother Leeds probably originated out of a religio-political dispute that became a subject of folklore among the locals rather than being passed on or being based on a single historical person.
Got it.
Regal believes that the colonial era political intrigue involving early New Jersey politicians Benjamin Franklin and Franklin's rival almanac publisher Daniel Leeds resulted in the Leeds family being described as monsters.
Mm.
Leeds had been publishing some items in his almanac that Franklin seemed a little too pagan.
I love the Farmer's Almanac.
Yeah, which is very pagan in itself. I feel like it's very
projectatorial.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I don't know
from the land, but yeah, I mean, it really is.
Uh huh.
And if that's all, they didn't have satellites in the sky to know what the weather pattern was gonna be like. All they had to go off was the shape when you slice into a fig, like what kind of winter you're gonna have, or on the harvest. So I mean, it's pagan because it's like tied into
nature.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
Benjamin Franklin can go kick rocks.
Yes. He told everyone that he thought Leeds was, or the Leeds were in league with the devil, and this gossip is what turned into what we know today as the Jersey Devil.
This coming from the man who tied a key to a kite to get struck by lightning.
Mm-hmm.
Genius.
Yes, very smart.
Good character witness.
Uh-huh. Eventually, Mr. Leeds died and left the almanac to his son, Titan Leeds. In 1728, Titan became, started to include the Leeds family crest on the cover of the almanacs.
Mm.
The crest had three creatures on it. All of them were bat-winged, dragon-like creatures, and this just added fuel to the fire.
Okay.
Basically. while there had been many sightings of the Jersey Devil, unfortunately, we don't have any evidence of it existing. But the people of New Jersey have blamed a litany of things on the on the Jersey Devil, including crops failing, cows not producing milk, and droughts.
People just need a villain.
Yes. Prominent citizens or government officials were among many who witnessed sightings of the creature. They included businessmen, postal offices, or officers, and policemen who had seen or heard the creature and saw his tracks left in the snow.
Ooh.
Yeah. Some have described the Jersey Devil as having a body like a kangaroo, a face of a horse, a head like a dog, bat-like wings, horns, a tail, and hooved feet.
How do they know what a kangaroo be looking like? They don't
That's
know.
That's true. I have no idea.
Y'all never seen a kangaroo.
That's actually a very accurate statement.
Thank you.
So, I have no idea, but that's what they described it like.
Okay.
There are a crap ton of stories about the New Jersey Devil, about the Jersey Devil coming out of his home in the Pinelands.
The New Jersey Devil. That's Mike the
Taylor.
Situation.
I swear I haven't been drinking. They are coming out of the Pinelands to wreak havoc on as many as 50 different towns. Like, this guy was just, like, flying around
all
everywhere.
Over. He was scootalooting everywhere.
Yes, he was. Joseph Bonaparte. Bonaparte? Napoleon's older brother. I quit.
Do we need
I quit
a
the podcast. I don't know. I don't know what's happening to me. It's because I wrote this too long ago.
Is Mercury doing something right now to, like, influence communication?
Possibly, and I wrote this like 2 weeks ago.
Brain no worky.
Yeah, so.
Old content.
Yeah, old content that I don't remember writing. Okay, anyway.
It's a shock for all of us to listen.
It's hard. Napoleon's older brother.
Yes.
Said that he saw the Jersey Devil while hunting on his estate in 1820.
Oh.
Yeah. During 1840, the Jersey Devil was blamed for several livestock killings. Similar attacks were reported during 1841, accompanied by tracks and screams.
Ooh.
Ugh.
Yikes.
The infamous Captain Kidd is said to have buried hidden treasure in the bay along New Jersey. Legend is that he beheaded one of his men to guard it forever.
What?
So that he would, like, guard his treasure in the afterlife? I don't know.
What? That's a terrible way to get security.
Yeah. There are better ways. But accounts claim that the headless pirate and the Jersey Devil became friends, and they were seen in the evenings walking along the Atlantic in nearby marshlands.
Cute. They're
right.
Besties.
Little buddies.
I love that.
The early 1900s were really big for the Jersey Devil. This is when things start really rolling on.
Big
along.
Year for him.
Yeah. Very important. The best-known sightings were in January of 1909, when Councilman E.P. Whedon of Trenton claimed to have been woken by flapping wings outside of his bedroom window. The councilman said that he found cloven footprints in the snow, and several other instances of similar footprints were reported in Trenton at the time.
Hmm.
Hundreds, if not thousands, of other people also claimed to have seen the devil within a week or so of the councilman's sighting. And news of at least 30 sightings were reported in local newspapers. Newspapers published hundreds of claims of claimed encounters with the Jersey Devil from all over the state of New Jersey within that week. There are claims that the creature had been attacked or had attacked a trolley car in Haddon Heights and a social club in Camden.
Mm.
Police supposedly fired on the creature, but it didn't do anything to him. Other reports say that there were unidentified footprints in the snow, and soon sightings of a devil-like creature were reported as far away as Delaware and Western Maryland.
Why are the cops corroborating this?
I don't know.
Like, are they genuinely, like, happening? Like,
maybe. Okay. I don't know.
All right.
In the 1900s, I think they probably... I don't know. I think there probably was a creature that they saw. I don't know about why it wouldn't die if they shot it.
Yeah. It's wearing Kevlar.
No, that's got to be it. That's the one. The newspaper coverage created fear all over the region to the point that schools closed and people stayed home from work.
What?
Yeah. People were freaking terrified.
Hysteria.
Terrified.
Oh my gosh.
Vigilante groups roamed the pines and countryside to search for it.
I can't. The colonial Avengers scurrying yes. over the countryside.
Looking for this kangaroo-looking this goozle bird.
A kangaroo with hoops. Named the Tootle Wutsits.
Yes. And they're shaking in their boots. Scared.
I cannot. It's like a cartoon.
Seriously.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
100%. In Greenwich during December 1925, a local farmer shot an unidentified animal as it attempted to steal his chickens and then photographed the corpse. Afterward, he claimed that none of the 100 people he showed it to could identify it.
Really?
It has since been debunked because they say we don't have any photographic evidence of something that would be
that
the Jersey Devil. But on July 27th, 1937, an unknown animal with red eyes seen by residents of Downington, Pennsylvania, was compared to the Jersey Devil by a reporter for the Pennsylvania Bulletin the next day. One fisherman said he saw the Jersey Devil serenading a mermaid. The stories are just wild. In 1951, a group of Gibbstown, New Jersey boys claimed to have seen a monster matching the devil's description, and claims of a corpse matching the Jersey Devil's description arose in 1957. In 1960, tracks and noises heard near Mays Landing were claimed to be from the Jersey Devil. In the same year, the merchants around Camden offered a $10,000 reward for the capture of the Jersey Devil, even offering to build a private zoo to house it if it was captured alive.
Oh, for fluff's sake.
They were like, you just catch it, we'll pay you for it, we'll just keep it in captivity forever.
We will capitalize off of it, yeah, if you find it.
Don't worry, we'll take care of it.
Got you.
Yeah.
Humanely.
Sure. Sure, sure, sure.
Oh, sorry.
After the hubbub in 1909, scientists started looking into the Jersey Devil and thought it may be possible for it to be a prehistoric creature from the Jurassic period.
What?
And that it might have survived in the limestone caves around the area.
I'm so sorry.
Pterodactyls and plesiosaurus were the dinosaurs most commonly thought that it could be.
I cannot.
A pterodactyl!
I mean, it would plesiosauruses didn't have wings, though, did they? I thought they were a fish dino.
That's what I thought. I don't...
Fins?
Maybe?
Okay.
I'm much more... If it's gonna be a dinosaur, I'm gonna lead toward pterodactyl.
Well, yeah, there's no way. It didn't survive the meteor by hiding in a cave.
No. Do you remember watching The Land Before Time as a kid and thinking that pterodactyls were like teeny tiny little bird-like guys?
Yeah, like then, hummingbirds.
Yeah, and then finding out that they were giant. I remember so vividly finding that out.
And did it being rock like, your world?
What? They aren't little baby birds?
No, they're giant.
Terrifying.
Crazy.
Absolutely terrifying.
I just found out about giant ground sloths. You know about those?
No.
They're fucking huge.
Are they?
Yeah. They're like the size of trees. Like 20, 25 feet tall. Giant sloths. And they would fuck your shit up.
Did you know about giant catfish?
What?
Yeah. They're like the size of like school buses.
What?
No, giant catfishes. I think so.
That'd be hard to noodle.
Yeah.
You could noodle that catfish.
Yeah, these catfish can be big. I don't know, apparently. My mom used to tell me about them. Which, like, now that I'm thinking about it, like, not
maybe
a
not
super reliable source. But I still am going to go out on a limb and believe that there are giant catfish. Okay, so New York scientists thought it could be a marsupial carnivore or an extinct fissipid. I don't know what that is. Another story is that it could be a Sandy Hill crane, which stands 5 feet high and has an 80-inch wingspan.
Wow, that's a big old bird.
It is a spicy bird when cornered, and it will attack the shit out of you.
Oh, it will?
Yeah.
It's like a goose.
Yeah, it's big mad if you get too close to it. And it gyrates when it flies.
What?
I don't know.
Like throw it back?
Probably.
Okay.
And that seems to like jive with what the Jersey Devil did.
Okay.
However, the Academy of Natural Sciences in Philadelphia could not match the Jersey Devil description to anything living, dead, on record.
Hmm.
In 1939, the Jersey Devil was named the official state demon, and Walter Edge, the governor of New Jersey, said, "When I was a boy, I was never threatened with the boogeyman. We were threatened with the Jersey Devil, morning, noon, and night."
I want an official state demon.
Right? We don't have one, I don't think.
I'm going to Google it right now.
Yeah, do it.
Okay.
In 1973, he gained nationwide attention after a feature film was made entitled The Legend of Boggy Hollow. In 1996, it was reported that Berlin-based Cosmic Comics had created a character, J.D., based on the Jersey Devil, who protects the environment and searches for the truth.
Cute!
Yeah, so that's the Jersey Devil.
We do not have a state demon.
Sad.
I know.
Bummer.
That is a bummer. That was really fun.
Thanks.
I like that a lot.
It was a good time.
It was a good time for me. Oh, how cool.
Jenny, I have to tell you about a new podcast I've been bitching.
Oh my God, tell me all about it.
So it's called The Center Cut, and it is hosted by Michael and David. The premise is utter chaos, which I love.
I love it too.
They watch the first and last episode of a TV series or season, and then discuss what they think happened in the middle.
As someone who watches TV so infrequently, this sounds amazing and hysterical, and I'm here for it.
Absolutely. And they do movies occasionally as well. I just listened to their episode on Dirty Dancing, where they watched the first 15 minutes and then the last 15 minutes, and I was absolutely cackling the entire time as they tried to piece together what happened.
All right, sold. I'm sold. Where can I go listen to them?
They are on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Stitcher. I'll also put their link in our show notes as well. Or you can search The Center Cut, and I'm sure you'll find them. You won't regret it.
What are you going to tell me today?
Oh, girl. I am going to try not to get, like, too emphatic.
Oh, Lord.
About this.
Oh, God. All right. Jenny's got a lot to say.
It's just something that, like, I really enjoy. So I'm going to try to keep it, like, brief and interesting. And I hope this isn't only interesting to me.
I'm sure it's not.
I hope not. Because I'm about to tell you about Hecate.
Hecate. Oh my gosh. Yay.
I'm so excited. So, okay, my sources are notmagic101.com, worldhistory.org.
Ooh, .org.
Britannica and Wikipedia.
Okay.
So, Hecate. There's like 1,000 ways to say her name. Hecate is just how I say it. Uh-huh. Is a goddess of Greek mythology. Capable of both good and evil.
All right.
Like many humans. She isn't the goddess of all everything, but she's the goddess of all everything that is cool and that, like, stirs my soul and makes me feel alive. So she is associated with witchcraft, magic, the moon, dreams, the night, doorways, creature of the darkness, hellhounds, ghosts, crossroads, ooh, and boundaries. She is the triple goddess, the embodiment of the maiden, the mother, and the crone. She symbolizes the phases of our life in a perpetual cycle of life and death and rebirth, as is the moon in her ceaseless cycles. According to Hesiod in his Theogony, Hecate is the daughter of Perses and Asteria, making her the granddaughter of the Titans Phoebe and Coeus.
Okay.
Euripides, on the other hand, mentions her mother is Leto. So there's, like, a little bit of a discrepancy. Both are used, like, the equal amount whenever it's referenced. Other writers claim her simply as the daughter of the night.
Hmm.
The goddess is frequently associated with Demeter, who, if you don't know who that is, she's Persephone's mom. And if you don't know who that is, go listen to episode 10, You Gotta Believe the Vatican, where Taylor covers Persephone. Hecate served as goddess CEO of magic and spells.
Oh, yes.
And witnessed the abduction of Demeter's daughter Persephone into the underworld, and torch in hand assisted in the search for her. Thus, pillars called Hecate stood at crossroads and doorways to prevent evil spirits from crossing the threshold.
Oh, interesting.
Hecate was represented as a single formed, clad in a long robe, holding burning torches. In later representations, she was triple formed with three bodies standing back to back so that she could look in all directions at once from the crossroads.
Nice.
She is a sentinel. She was accompanied by packs of barking dogs. From the 5th century BCE, the goddess is associated with the darker side of the human experience. As the Oxford Classical Dictionary casually defines her, quote, outlandish in her infernal aspects. She is more at home on the fringes than in the center of Greek polytheism. Intrinsically ambivalent and polymorphous, she straddles conventional boundaries and eludes definition.
I love that.
It's the coolest.
I like that they were like, we can't define her.
She is unable to be defined. The undefinable.
Super cool.
Hesiod describes the goddess in a 5-star rave review. And says, Zeus, Cronus's son, honored Hecate above all others. He gave her splendid gifts to have a share of the earth and of the barren sea. And from the starry sky as well, she has a share in honor, and is honored most of all by the immortal gods. For even now, whenever any human on the earth sings propitiation by performing fine sacrifices according to her custom, he invokes Hecate. And much honor very easily stays with the man whose prayers the goddess accepts with gladness, and she bestows happiness upon him.
Hmm.
She's so cool! That's from Theogony 411 through 420.
Okay.
Hesiod also goes on to say that she supports or is a protective goddess of warriors, athletes, hunters, horsemen, herdsmen, shepherds, fishermen, and children. So she is here.
She got quite the
rap list. She really...
Weird.
She really does. She has an extensive resume.
Yeah.
And unlike, because a lot of the other, like, Greek mythos are, like, the gods don't like to get too involved in human affairs. And Hecate is not like that. And I'll go into that in a second. She keeps furries as pet. The furries as pets.
She's the goddess of furries.
Oh, no.
She probably is, though.
Probably. the furies, who are devilish and terrifying winged creatures who punish wrong. Think the Jersey Devil.
Okay.
They're Jersey Devils who punish wrongdoing at Hecate's behest.
Sweet.
And her children are the Empusae, female daemons partial to seducing travelers. Which is kind of like reminiscent or a reflection of Lilith and her succubus folklore. She also has some green thumbery and is associated with plant lore and the concoction of medicines and, better yet, poison. In particular, she was thought to give instruction in those closely related arts. Apollonius of Rhodes in the Argonautica mentions that Medea was taught by Hecate. The goddess is described as wearing oak and fragments of Sophocles' lost play, The Root Diggers.
Hmm.
And an ancient commentary on Apollonius of Rhodes' Argonautica describes her as having a head surrounded by serpents twining through branches of oak, which is a look and will be my Halloween costume. Do not steal my ideas.
Wait, is that Medusa?
Like Medusa?
Okay.
Similar. Her imagery
okay.
is similar.
All right.
Different backstory. That would be a good folklore
I think
episode,
so.
Medusa. The yew in particular was sacred to Hecate, and her attendants draped wreaths of yew around the necks of black bulls, which they slaughtered in her honor, and the yew boughs were burned on funeral pyres.
Woof.
Woof indeed. The yew was associated with the alphabet, and the scientific name for yew today, taxis, was derived from the Greek word for yew, toxos, which is similar to toxin for their word bow, and toxicon, their word for poison. It is presumed that the latter were named after the tree because its superiority for both bows and poison.
Oh. Okay. That's
fascinating.
Quite the, like, connect the dots.
Yes, it is. The way the, like, language, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah.
Hecate favors offers of garlic, which is closely associated with her cult, and she is also associated with Cyprus, a tree symbolic of death in the underworld.
I mean, you and I are about to put garlic in anything and everything. So.
And now I do it for Hecate.
Yes.
There's also a number of other plants that are often associated with her, although the majority of them are incredibly poisonous. And so you can't really get a hand. It's belladonna, ditten, and mandrake.
I want to have a poison garden
so bad. Yeah.
And I, it's so one hard day. To get your hands on all of those, though.
Yeah. Or you have to have, like, special, like, permits, I think. It's cool, though.
I want a poison garden.
Same. It has been suggested that the use of dogs for digging up mandrake is further corroboration of the association of this plant with Hecate. Because and she is very closely associated with dogs because she has three transformation stories.
Oh, wow.
So, and it's no doubt that Hecate, the queen of the witches, is also the birth of the witch's familiar folklore. She has two familiars.
Okay.
One is a ferocious black she-dog. And a polecat, which, if you don't know what that is, I didn't either. I had to Google it, but it's basically a ferret.
Okay. Cat, but make it long.
Cat, but make it long. Polecat. Little skinny long boy. Before their life as witches familiars, they were people who caught the ire of the gods. So like I said, there are three transformation stories. I'm going to tell you each one. There are two stories about the origin of the polecat.
Okay.
One is Gail, the witch, and she is kind of a pretty shitty witch at that. According to a writing from The Alien from Animals 15.11, translated by Schofield, which The Alien is a commentary on Greek natural history from the second century.
Pause real quick. I'm so sorry if anybody can hear the mower that's happening outside. That's what that very annoying noise is, if anybody can hear it.
Sorry. I wonder if they will. Maybe it's like ambient noise. We'll see.
I hope not, but we'll see.
So, quotes this as being said, "I have heard that the land marten, which is what they used to call polecats, was once a human being. It has also reached my hearing that Gail was her name then. She was a dealer in spells and a pharmakese, which is a sorceress. That she was extremely incontinent and that she was afflicted with abnormal sexual desires. Nor has it escaped my notice that the anger of this goddess Hecate transformed it into this evil creature. May the goddess be gracious to me. Fables and their telling I leave to others."
Huh.
From the passage, it's pretty safe to assume that by the standards of the time, Gail had some unconventional appetites. We might also construe that Gail had a habit of misusing her powers bestowed upon her by Hecate as a sorceress and used them for personal gain, and that she had a habit of going back on her deals.
Not good.
Nope. Given that Hecate is the goddess of witches in the Pharmakes, it is likely that Gail was a priestess or a devotee of hers. Even setting aside like her kinky inclinations, we could believe that Hecate was dissatisfied with her priestess for the misuse of her abilities and sought to punish her appropriately. Of the three stories, this is the only one that Hecate caused and like actually turned her into a polecat. And this was Gail's punishment. So the polecat is described as being an evil creature from like the way they wrote about it back in the day. Probably they think because ferrets have a scent gland and they produce a gross scent and they have like a weird mating process where it's like rough polygamous orgy with like one male and very many partners.
Really?
Yes.
I did not know. I knew about the scent gland, but did not know that they were, wild.
Wild.
Yeah.
It's like group. Mating.
Group sex.
Group sex. It's ferret group sex.
Interesting.
It was presumably that this was the type of her abnormal sexual activities.
I see.
Yeah.
It's all becoming clear.
It's all coming back.
Yep.
The other transformation is the story of Galanthius, the nurse. In comparison to Gail, Galanthius appears to be a little more in step with the society. Asonius Liberalis gives us most detailed account of this transformation, which came after Galanthius dared to intervene with the punishment of Alcmene being brought out by the Fates at the behest of Hera.
Okay.
So by folding their arms and refusing to participate in the birth of Heracles by forming and measuring his life thread, the Fates were prolonging the birth pains of Alcmene. Punishment from Hera for her involvement with Zeus. Galanthius feared for the sanity of Alcmene and invoked the name of Zeus, telling the Fates that a boy had already been born. This confused the Fates enough that their arms dropped and the birth was allowed to take place. Galanthius really fucked up threefold. She thwarted the will of the Fates, which in turn thwarted the will of Hera, and managed to put the Fates in Hera's debt. Like, such a terrible move. Bold as hell, but terrible. Imagine lying to the Fates.
Wouldn't recommend it.
Wouldn't recommend it. Anyway, the Fates and Hera were level 10 pissed at her and turned her into a polecat because of their terrible reputation. They wrote in this story about Galanthius that she would be cursed to birth through her throat and be mounted by the ears.
What?
Which is, they thought that polecats threw up their young because as soon as they would carry their young in their mouth.
Oh.
And apparently, yanking on your neck, the way that this was written was like, this is an obvious fact. As we now know, that pulling on the neck of a female increases ovulation.
What?
And polecats would do that. You yank on their neck and it helps you get pregnant. Apparently it's a thing that people, like, if you pull on your neck, it'll make you ovulate.
I'm bamboozled.
I was also entirely bewildered.
What?
I read about that. Mounted through the ears. So, yes. The last transformation is Hecuba, the Hound of Hecate.
Okay.
So, this is from The Metamorphosis by Ovid. Hecuba, rage linked with grief, oblivious of her years, made her way to Polymestor, author of that foul murder, and sought an audience. She attacked the king and dug her fingers in his eyes, his treacherous eyes, and gouged his eyeballs out.
Oh my god.
Incensed to see their king's calamity, the Thracians started to attack the queen with sticks and stones. But she snapped at the stones, snarling, and when her lips were set to form words and she tried to speak, instead she barked. Fun fact about Hecuba, she is the mother of Cassandra, okay, who is who I almost did this episode about. I will cover eventually. In Hecuba's story, we once again see that Hecate is favoring the change, and what actually causes Hecuba to change varies in different accounts. No deity is responsible. Regardless of what causes, it is a divine force that turned her into the dog that now serves as Hecate's faithful servant. And we see through this one that Hecate accepts the transformed woman in her little, like, girl gang. In both cases, women are rejected, both for meddling in the affairs of powers far greater than their own. They are women using their own wit and power to challenge what society might have perceived as greater, and for that they are punished. It's interesting that it is these women, rather than the others transformed throughout Greek mythology, that Hecate takes as her own. And I know what you're asking me. Jenny, how do people worship Hecate?
Jenny, I got a question for you.
Yes.
How do people worship Hecate?
Oh my god, I'm so glad you asked. I get it. Hecate is a beacon in the night.
Yeah.
She is gracious and magical. You could visit her sanctuary, the sanctuary of Hecate in Lagina, which is in modern day Turkey.
Okay.
Where the ruins of her temple can be found.
Real so life. So cool.
Real life. And we will post it on the Instagram, so go follow us on the Insta. But if Turkey travel is out of the question, you can do it the old-fashioned 2nd-century Greek way. She had unusual rituals performed in her honor in the Greek religion, included the offerings of food given at crossroads, road junctions, or any other sort of boundary or threshold known as the Supper of Hecate. She took these, she took the form of small cakes and eggs, cheese, bread, and dog meat, which were lit with miniature torches, or alternatively a dish of red mullet, which was prohibited from offering to any other god.
Aha.
Uh-huh. A lot of people sacrificed their dogs, especially puppies.
No.
Because of the connection to the dog. I am not encouraging you.
Please don't.
To sacrifice your puppy.
Please don't.
But she's also closely tied with Anubis, who is the Egyptian god that, like, carries people to
the underworld.
The underworld. So,
Egyptian god would be cool to cover.
Yeah, that would be really cool. You should do Anubis.
On it.
He's a cool one.
On it.
So, and last but not least, you could read her this poem.
A poem.
Shades of midnight blue float through the quiet pall of the full moon sky. Fireflies dance in the sweet midsummer air. Outlined in a jagged circle of congregants are 12 moonstones, and inside is a triangle with 3 large lapis rocks. In the clearing stands the goddess Hecate, flanked by cedar torches and alert, dutiful mastiffs on Stygian patch, hanging in her command. Hecate, wearing a garland of rosemary interwoven with basil and hemlock, motions up to the night sky while speaking her incantations. A young maiden steps forward and spills a rough-hue hemp bag full of white bones. She disrobes, bearing her curvy allure to the four winds. The midnight goddess tilts her long neck and caresses her hair as she relieves her of crimson life. Servants collect the fresh blood and pour it onto an ivory heap of weathered bones that gladly drink the salty gift. Lunar light bathes the bones as melodious words reverberate through the nighttime glade, conjuring lost friends. Stark white limbs animate, forming alert soldiers in Hecate's growing army of the damned.
Ooh, good night!
Woof.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Well.
She's a little bit of a badass.
Yeah. Yeah. She's got a lot going on.
Girl has a lot going on. Hashtag girl boss.
Uh-huh.
She is running her own empire.
She's the CEO.
CEO entrepreneur, born in 1964. Jeffrey Bezos.
Can't. Oh.
I'm sorry. That was so
bad. Oh my god.
I do have Bo Burnham playing on my head.
Yeah. Yeah.
In repeat.
Same.
So.
Most of the time.
That's the story of Hecate.
Good job.
Thank you.
That was a good one. We've been waiting for that one. We knew that was coming.
Yeah. I think, like, our first or second folklore, I was like, I'm going to do her one day.
Yeah.
And here we are a year and a half later.
Yeah.
Love it.
I love that both stories today were, like, very early on in, like, the idea stage.
And now,
a year and a half later, here we are.
Come to fruition.
Yeah.
I love it. Do you have a bright and shiny?
Yeah, I do. I got the biggest margarita of my life last night.
Ooh.
With Allie, and they were giant. It was great.
Like fishbowl size?
Yeah, they were like 27 ounces.
Holy mackerel.
It was huge.
Holy.
But yeah, it was amazing. It was good to just catch up.
How fun. Yeah. I love that.
What's your bright and shiny?
My dear friend Jaime gave me a gift yesterday that is a bejeweled skull soap dispenser. And I know more than anybody Halloween decorations should not be house decorations, but this will now be
house decorations.
House decorations, a permanent feature. And it just made my heart like so happy that she saw it and she was like, ooh, Jenny, that spooky bitch would really love this.
That's awesome.
So Jaime is my bright and shiny. She's very thoughtful.
Oh, that's so sweet. Yeah. I can't wait to see your bedazzled skulls.
Sitting in the middle of my kitchen.
Can't wait.
I love it. Well, thanks for listening. If you like what you hear, you can always leave us a review.
Yeah. It helps us out a whole lot. Super, super appreciate it. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram.
Join the Facebook group.
If you have a spooky story you want us to tell, you can write it into alittlebitgrim@gmail.com or go visit our website, alittlebitgrim.com.
There's merch there too.
Yeah, there is. So do what you will with that information.
Follow your heart and have a great Friday.
Yeah, and don't forget to be kind to yourself
and to others.
Goodbye.